Let's take a trip down memory lane. It's time for Niagara County's Great History Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Great Niagara County History Show.
Doug Steffen here, host of the Good Day Radio program. You're listening to Niagara County's information station, W-L-E-L. Lockport.
How rude of you, Doug. But at any rate, welcome to the History Show. I am joined in studio with the Executive Director of the Niagara County Historical Society, Miss Becky Pittler. Good morning, Becky. How are you this morning?
Good morning. For having me on the radio this morning.
Well, we're certainly glad you could join us today. I know there's a lot of activities going on over at that History Center, and of course we have a lot of history to talk about as well. So tell us, what's on deck here for the next couple of days, weeks, months at the History Center?
Well, I'm very excited to let you know about all the things happening at the Niagara History Center. It's a new year, and it's time to renew your membership to the Niagara History Center if you haven't already. If you have renewed your membership, we appreciate it, and we couldn't keep up the important task of preserving Niagara County's history without our dedicated members. If you're not a member, please consider becoming a member. Our members enjoy a bi-monthly newsletter and enjoy unlimited free admission to all of our three sites. Our members also get 10% off of our gift shop purchases. We also have a business membership level. So if you're a business owner, please consider becoming a member. And we offer events and educational programs throughout the year. Our next event, you only have a couple days left to participate in the Bond House Birthday Bash raffle. Our raffle includes gift cards and gift certificates for places such as Applebee's, Chevetta's, Clyde's Feed and Animal Center, Gyro Cleaners, Kith and Kin Bake Shop, the New York Beer Project, Newfane Lumber, One Eye Jack's, Salvatore's Grand Hotel, Tops, Tractor Supply, and Tim Hortons. We also have a signed cleat from the Buffalo Bills, a signed puck from the Buffalo Sabres, an autographed photo from the Buffalo Bandits, and tickets for a Buffalo Bisons games. Tickets are available only for a couple more days at our 215 Niagara Street site from today until Saturday at noon. So tickets can be purchased from 9 to 5 today, Thursday and Friday, and Saturday from 9 to noon, again at 215 Niagara Street. The raffle drawing will be held on Saturday at 2 p.m. This raffle is one of the events this year in honor of our Bond Holly House's 200th birthday celebration. So please come out and check out our raffle items and support this historic home. Next Monday on President's Day holiday, we will be hosting a children's program for 7 to 11-year-olds from 10 to 1. The theme is Presidents on Money, and there will be games, activities, and crafts surrounding the theme. Advanced reservations are required, so please call 716-434-7433 for more information and to reserve a spot, as they will fill up quickly. There is a small fee involved with this program, but the kids always have such a great time in our children's programs. And so does our educational committee. So come out and find out all about the interesting things about presidents who have been on money. On Thursday, February 22nd at 2 p.m., which is next week, our own Anne Marie Lineberry will present a program on presidential visits to Niagara County at our 215 Niagara Street site. Anne Marie's a wonderful presenter, and she's a wealth of information. So come on out and hear about all the people that visited Niagara County, either when they were a president or who would become president in the future. On Wednesday, February 28th, we are hosting History Center Night at Lockport's popular Seamus Restaurant. On that night, Seamus will make a generous donation from the dinner sold to the Niagara History Center. Come out for a delicious dinner. We're going to have a pleasant table activity featuring Niagara County history and support the History Center. Reservations should be made directly with the Seamus Restaurant at 716-433-9809. And again, that's Wednesday, February 28th. Come out and enjoy a delicious dinner at Seamus and support the History Center. We are also accepting applications from college students for the 2024 Summer Internship Program, funded through the Greg Lewis Foundation's 2024 Workership Program. To be eligible to apply, college students must live in Eastern Niagara County or be attending either Niagara County Community College or Niagara University. Students must be currently attending college when applying and must be available to work from mid-May through mid-August. We have two internship positions available, a museum assistant and a registrar curatorial assistant. The positions are 5 days a week, including alternate Saturdays. For more information, please contact the History Center at 716-434-7433. This spring, we will be having our annual fund drive. We appreciate all monetary donations we receive, as they are very important to helping us continue our long history of service to the community. Donations to our annual fund drive are even more important than ever. It's just like everyone else's cost of living rising, our operating costs have increased over the last several years, and funds are even more important than ever to sustaining our collections, maintaining our 7 buildings and 3 locations, offering our research and educational services to the community. Please call us at 716-434-7433 for more information on our annual fund drive. And as always, we thank you for our support. The Niagara County Historical Society's programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council of the Arts, with the support of the Office of the Governor and the New York State Legislature. And we're very much appreciative of that. And also, we are looking for some volunteers. Have you ever thought about how enjoyable it would be to share the background of some of Niagara County's historical figures? The Step Back in Time Players are looking for you to join their group of reenactors. And we have a dedicated group of reenactors who volunteer their time to share their knowledge of some local historical figures with presentations in our local cemeteries, for community groups, senior residential communities, and area historical societies. We're also looking for volunteer docents to lead school tours through the History Center's museum complex on Niagara Street and on walking tours around the locks down at the canal. Docents are guides who tell the stories of the history and legacy of Niagara County, the Erie Canal, and the Lockport Locks through exhibits, artifacts, historic buildings, and other sites in Lockport. There are training sessions available. And if you would like any more information on either one of these volunteer activities, you can call the History Center at 716-434-7433. We also want you to consider, when you're out and about, consider our gift shops for that little something for family and friends. Our main gift shop is located at the Niagara History Center at 215 Niagara Street in Lockport. And it's open Monday through Saturday from 9 to 5. And our Erie Canal Discovery Center gift shop at 24 Church Street in Lockport is open winter hours of Friday and Saturdays from 10 to 3. Both of our gift shops offer many books on a variety of historical subjects, places, people, and many are written by local authors. We also have a variety of Lockport and Erie Canal themed items like T-shirts, keychains, soap, pins, mugs, tote bags, prints, postcards, CDs, and DVDs. We also offer Hog Scraper candlesticks and hurricane lantern reproductions and cat's meow pieces depicting local churches, the Flight of Five, and local businesses. We have hand-dipped candles as well as beeswax candles, and we also have reproduction hat pins and a selection of greeting cards. We sell local maple syrup and honey products. And one of our more popular items, newest items, is the Lithopane nightlights. They are molded porcelain nightlights which reveal a picture when lit from behind. For the kids, we have a good selection of historical toys, and we also have a selection of minerals and gems. And for the kids at heart, we have a nice selection of old-fashioned candy at the Erie Canal Discovery Center gift shop. Our prices are very reasonable, and remember, if you're a member, you also receive a 10% discount on gift shop purchases. So come out and check us out when you want to send that little item to somebody to remind them of Lockport's history, or you need an Easter basket stuffer. We have a lot of great things that could go in an Easter basket, so come out and check us out.
All right, boy, you got a lot done there in a short amount of time there, Becky. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Becky Pittler from the Niagara County Historical Society. She is the new executive director. Not really new anymore. You've been there for how many months now?
since September.
Since September. So that's not new. You're vested. Of course, you've been a volunteer there for, what, 40-some years, I believe.
Almost 40 years, yeah.
So you know a thing or two about a thing or two. So we're going to be discussing the history of Valentine's Day and some other events going on at the History Center. We'd love to have you join our conversation this morning. All you have to do is dial 433-1433, and you'll be in talking with us about the history of Valentine's Day, and maybe you've got a couple of memories you'd like to share with us as well. Have you caught your breath there?
Yep.
Okay. Back to you, Becky.
Yes, please call and share some of your memories of Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day is also called St. Valentine's Day or the Feast of St. Valentine, and it's observed on February 14th in a lot of countries around the world. It actually began as a church celebration honoring St. Valentine. And the Catholic Church was the one that actually fixed the date of February 14th as the date to celebrate Valentine's Day, as this is considered the date that St. Valentine was buried. It's also an official feast day in some religions, so that's why it has the title of St. Valentine's Day. There's much lore in regards to the many St. Valentines in history. Some say he was a priest that performed Christian weddings for soldiers who were forbidden to marry. And in order to remind these men of their vows and God's love, St. Valentine is said to have cut hearts from parchment and gave them to the soldiers, thereby starting the widespread use of hearts on St. Valentine's Day. St. Valentine also supposedly wore a purple amethyst ring with an image of Cupid engraved on it as a symbol to let people know that he could perform marriage ceremonies. Because of its association with St. Valentine, amethyst has become the birthstone of February, and it's thought to attract love. So he wore the ring and a symbol to let people know that he could perform marriage ceremonies even though they were against the law. The day was first associated with romantic love in the Middle Ages when courtly love flourished. Prospective lovers either said or sang their romantic verses. So it goes pretty far back. In 1382, Chaucer wrote about lovebirds. For this was on St. Valentine's Day, when every bird cometh there to choose his mate. This poem was written to honor the first anniversary of the engagement of King Richard II of England to Anne of Bohemia. And that goes way back when he talks about St. Valentine's Day. That was in 1382. So the history goes pretty far back. The first written Valentines appear sometime after 1400. And paper Valentines that were actual Valentines began to appear in the 1500s and were given in place of Valentine gifts or oral or musical greetings that were previously done.
Wait a minute. So you're saying that Hallmark was around in 1500s?
No, not quite. Hallmark actually started in about the 1910s.
What a brilliant idea they had.
Yes, they started as Hall Brothers, and they started with postcards, actually. They produced their first Valentine in 1913. But the first known Valentine that we have recorded in history, supposedly, was dated October 25th, 1684. So that's pretty far back to go back for a Valentine. We don't really think of them as being that old. Now, Americans began exchanging handmade Valentines in the early 1700s. So in the 1700s, in the 18th century, Valentine's Day evolved into an occasion in which lovers expressed their love for each other by presenting flowers, offering confectionery or candy, and sending greeting cards, now known as Valentines. Sometime after 1723, America began importing writers from England, and these were little booklets comprised of verses and messages that could be copied onto decorated papers. And some writers contained verses which men could send to ladies and responses that ladies could send back to gentlemen. So people started to use these writers that were imported from England to come up with the verses that they would write. And they would tell you the proper verses that gentlemen could send to ladies and the proper responses that ladies could send back to gentlemen. The earliest Valentines were made by hand. They were folded and often sealed with wax, and they were delivered in person. They were left in some location where the recipient would surely find them. So if you left them on somebody's doorstep or in a special place that you had for each other, some of them were pen and ink sketches or watercolors, and they were made of paper or cloth, and some were even made out of bark. Tree bark was a popular item to use for a Valentine. And you could embellish them with lace or yarn or thread, mirror chips, feathers, shells, locks of hair, ribbons, dried flowers. They were all highly decorated, and you used whatever you had around.
So basically homemade crafts.
Homemade crafts, yes. Before we had the printed Valentines, you made all of your own things, and you could actually put anything in them or on them that you wanted. Locks of hair were very popular, of course, because you would give your Valentine a lock of your hair.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. You know, and it's
romantic.
It's romantic.
Get creative, make your own.
You're creative, and kids today still make Valentines. Some you know, have crafts to make Valentines or make Valentine-related gifts for their parents or to exchange Valentines in school.
Right. Well, maybe some of our listeners will remember the Valentines that they had created in years gone past. Well, the ones they're going to create this year, you never know. And they could share those with us by dialing 433-1433. We'd love to hear your Valentine stories, folks.
Yes, please call and tell us and share and reminisce some memories about Valentine's Day. An interesting custom related to St. Valentine's Day in the 1700s dealt with dancing. And it had the gentleman drawing the names of a lady from a hat or a bowl. So ladies would put their name on a little piece of paper at the dance. And then each young man would enter the drawing, and he would draw out a lady's name. And he would affix the paper drawn with the name of the young lady to his sleeve. And that is where the custom led to the saying, "He wears his heart on his sleeve." So that's who he would dance with for the evening, and that's where that saying came from, that he wears his heart on his sleeve, because he wore the heart that he drew from the bowl of the young lady that he would dance with for the evening. In the United States, the first mass-produced Valentines were sold in 1847 by Esther Holland of Massachusetts. She began her business by importing paper lace and floral decorations from England, and then she created cards and then sold them. So they were, that's why they were considered the first mass-produced Valentines. Also in the mid-1800s, more of the symbols we associate with Valentine's Day began to appear. We had red hearts, bunches of roses, cupids with bows and arrows, and churches with couples taking vows or exchanging wedding rings appearing on our cards. So people really think about what we associate today with Valentine's. We wear red. We have red hearts everywhere. Our decorations usually have red hearts. We have cupids with bows and arrows. Roses are a popular gift given at Valentine's Day, red roses especially. So we really have a lot of symbols associated with Valentine's Day. And some of the reasons we have those symbols, roses, let's take roses for instance, they speak of love. And if you rearrange the letters of the word rose, you get Eros, E-R-O-S, and that's the god of love. So that's why roses are associated symbol of love. How about Cupid? He's one of the gods of mythology. And in Latin, the word Cupid means desire. So Cupid is mischievous and has arrows to transfix the hearts of youth and maidens. And some people, some of the legends say that Cupid has two arrows. One to nick his love, and the other to nick the person he does not want to love. So most people think of Cupid as just loving, but sometimes the meaning of his arrows can go either way. Cherubs are lovable winged creatures, and they're descendants of Cupid, but they don't have any arrows. They're not mischievous. They're more loving. So we often see cherubs, those winged creatures, on Valentine's. What about doves and pigeons? Most people don't associate pigeons with Valentine's Day, but they were associated with Valentine's Day in the past. We do see a lot of doves still on Valentine's. And anybody have any idea why we would use doves or pigeons on Valentine's? It's kind of interesting because they mate for life. Therefore, they were often used as symbols on Valentine's.
Well, isn't that something? They mate for life. I did not know that.
Yep, so there's a lot of doves on Valentine's. It's a little harder to find pigeons on some older Valentine's, but you might find some pigeons on older Valentine's.
I was thinking like a homing pigeon. You're going to drop off your Valentine's.
Yep.
My bird sent my Valentine for me. Thanks, honey.
Well, you know, postage was expensive, so probably maybe somebody could send their bird to send their to their mate to drop off a Valentine. You also used to see a lot of lace work on Valentine's, especially the old Valentine's. Or they would create a lace look by pinpricks. So some of the earliest Valentine's, people would do a craft-like thing and do pinpricks and do all the design on the paper with all multiple pinpricks. And so it would give the illusion of lace. But they also used real lace on real like cotton lace on Valentine's, and they also used gold lace, which was real gold lace on some old Valentine's. And the reason why they used lace, the term lace comes from the Latin word meaning to snare or noose. So lace was often used on Valentine's because you were trying to snare or noose your love. So that's why there's a lot of lace used on Valentine's. And a lot of the old Valentine's had that honeycomb tissue paper in it. It was very, they were very popular to use honeycomb from 1800 or from the 1900s to the 1940s. And it's interesting to note that like from the 1900s to the 1910s, the tissue would be blue, pink, or cream in color. Not our traditional red that we think of. And most of the honeycomb cards and most of the Valentine cards prior to World War II were made in Germany and imported to this country. And almost all the cards between the 1900s and the 1910s were made in Germany and would come with some of these honeycomb tissue paper in them. And in the 20s and 30s, the honeycomb would become much larger, and some even, when you open the card, the honeycomb would come 360 degrees, and it would help the card stand up. So, and it also changed in the 20s and the 30s from the blue, pink, and cream in color to red in color on the Valentine's. What do you think happened during the war years, though? Honeycomb was still used on cards during the war years, but it was only used as a small embellishment. It became much smaller because there was a limited use of tissue paper during the war. So elaborate cards of the early Victorian times became much smaller when we got to the war years. They also had very much patriotic themes during the war. So we saw less embellishment on the cards. They were just simple, one-sided, small paper Valentines by the 1940s. So the greeting card industry, we were talking about Hallmark a few minutes ago. The greeting card industry really took off in the 1840s with the commercial manufacture of envelopes. So the commercial manufacture of envelopes really jump-started the greeting card industry. Prior to that, most greeting cards were hand-delivered, like we said. And once you could put them in an envelope and start mailing them, it really helped the greeting card industry. And even though the greeting card industry really took off in the 1840s, the exchanging of Valentine greetings did not become a true tradition until the time of the Civil War, when Valentine's Day became the second most popular celebration following Christmas. And we talked about a lock of hair, and especially during the Civil War, soldiers were sending Valentines back home to their ladies, and they often, these Valentines had a place to put a lock of hair in it. So a gentleman could send back a remembrance being away from his sweetheart during Valentine's Day. And Valentines really took off then during the Victorian era. They became even more popular. The mail system introduced the penny post, which made it easier to mail Valentines. And prior to this, postage was too costly, and people often hand-delivered their Valentines on the recipient's front stoop because they couldn't afford the postage. Now, postage in the northern states was about 25 cents to a couple dollars, depending on the size of the Valentine. In the southern states, it was much more expensive, so people couldn't afford to send their Valentines. And the penny postcards became very popular between 1890 and 1917 because they were cheaper to send. So there's a lot of Valentine postcards out there and a lot of other holiday postcards out there during that time frame that people sent them because they only cost you a penny to mail. Now, the Victorian Valentines became very elaborate. Some of them are a foot long, maybe a foot tall. They have the honeycomb. They have paper springs inside of them to open them up and display them. They often stood up by themselves. Some were made flat, so that once you could put them in an envelope and deliver them, and then once your lover got the Valentine, they could open it up. So they might pull down the flat bottom. It would make it 3D. Or it had elaborate cutouts, like multiple layers of cutouts, so that when you pulled open the card, you would look through all these frames of cutouts all the way to the back of the card, and it might have six or seven layers of the card. So because these Valentines were so elaborate, people got them on Valentine's Day, but they put them out in their parlor and they displayed them all year long, or they would arrange them in albums just made for greeting cards. So because this was occurring, this custom led to the greeting card manufacturers trying to outdo each other and make more elaborate Valentines, and they change the designs and the themes each year. And to this day, the greeting card industry and the candy industry still change their themes each year for Valentine's Day. Now, during the Victorian era, it was considered improper for a lady to send a Valentine to a man. Only men could send Valentines to their sweetheart. And often these elaborate Valentines could cost up to a month's earnings. So you really had to love your sweetheart to spend a month's earnings on her Valentine. So it got really popular. Also during the Victorian era, those who didn't want the attention of certain suitors would anonymously send what was called vinegar Valentines. And you really didn't want to receive these. They were also called penny dreadfuls. They were comically insulting and rejecting unwanted admirers. So they were very, they were called vinegar because they had very sour language on it. I have an old Valentine postcard that actually has a very large lemon on the front of it, And it says, to my Valentine, I bid you adieu and I send you lemons. So goodbye to you. And it is something that a lady sent to her gentleman and bid her adieu. Bid him adieu.
Well, then, isn't that something?
Yes.
Oh, jaded
so
love.
They're very popular collectibles today, these vinegar Valentines. And also, they were used during the 19th and early 20th century to target suffragettes. So if you were a suffragette, you might have received a lot of vinegar Valentines in your day.
Oh, my.
And it was interesting to note that cards prior to the early 1900s were often not signed or dated, as it was considered bad luck. So when you found a Valentine on your doorstep, you just knew who it was from, or you hoped you knew who it was from.
Ooh, that could get tricky, couldn't it?
Yes, it could.
Oh, boy.
Yes, especially if you had a secret admirer who was trying to get you.
Well, speaking of secret admirers, I know you have some listening out there that would just love to give us a call at 433-1433 to share their Valentine's memories. Perhaps a story of jaded love. You get a lemon popsicle stick. Hard to say what's going on there. But, yes, feel free to call us, folks. Becky's doing all the talking here, so maybe you could just share your stories and have some fun with us. 433-1433.
Okay, so before 1914, most Valentines were imported from Europe. And during the war years of World War I, any foreign cards were removed from the American market. So American card manufacturers really got their start in the Valentine business during that time period when we got to World War I. And it should be noted that red, used extensively now for Valentine's Day, became a popular color for Valentine's in the early 1900s when the American manufacturers began to use it primarily as the main color for Valentine's. So the American manufacturers really drove the red color. Prior to that, like we said, we had blue and pink and cream. And it also, prior to the 1920s, Valentine exchanging of cards was mainly an adult event. And in the 1920s, more school children than adults continued the custom of exchanging cards. So that's when it became very popular to start exchanging cards in the one-room schoolhouses. In the 1920s, we also see more sweetheart-themed cards. Also, manufacturers started making more specific cards. So this was the American influence on Valentine's. We started having sweetheart cards, making cards specialized for the teacher, for mom, for dad, for baby, sister, brother. So you can get Valentine's for anybody today, a good friend, special friend, a mother, a father, a wife, you know, a husband, your kids. So that's really the American manufacturers really started doing that in the 1920s. The Tariff Act of 1930 required all of our imports to be marked with their place of manufacture. So now it's easier to tell how old and date a Valentine if you have an old Valentine, because after 1930, they were required to be marked where they were made, made in Germany or made in the USA. Like I talked about a little bit ago about World War II, in the 1940s, patriotism and military themes were popular. And because of the shortages of supplies during World War II, the paper quality and the printing quality of Valentine's became very poor in nature. So, like I said, they shrunk, really shrunk in size. They didn't have any embellishments. They had a lot of themes. I have a couple old 1940s Valentines that have, one has a missile on it with a soldier sitting on it. They were American themes, red, white, and blue for Valentines, had American eagles on them. So they were very popular. But once again, the quality of the paper and the printing really got less, and they really shrunk in size. And that's where, if you notice, after the war years too, The 50s, it picked up a little bit. Valentine's got a little bigger in size. But in the 60s, they went to being very small in size, too, that you would trade back and forth in the school. The U.S. Greeting Card Association estimates that over 190 million Valentines are sent each year, mostly to sweethearts or family members. When you include the Valentine exchanges in schools, the number of Valentine's exchanges is estimated to reach close to a billion. Which, anybody got an idea of who's the most popular person that receives the most Valentines? What's the title of the most popular person to receive the most Valentines?
The art teacher.
You're right, the teacher.
Yes.
It is the teacher.
Very good. Well, I knew it wouldn't be the principal because
Usually
you see the principal, you're in trouble.
And it's interesting to note that around the 50s, the 50s and the 60s is when they started adding the teacher Valentine to the pack and selling the packs of Valentines that we still see today that say, you know, there's 20 Valentines in the box with a card for the teacher, a special card for the teacher. And that really became popular then. And you used to get probably 30 or 40 Valentines in the packs in the 50s and the 60s as opposed to today, which I don't even know how many you get. Some of the Valentine packs, I think, only have 12 Valentines in them.
So you got to buy three packs then to get all the kids in your class.
Right.
Well, isn't that clever?
Yeah, and I think the age group has gone down, too, of who, you know, where it stops when you exchange Valentines in the schools. I know, personally, my father used to tell me about exchanging Valentines in the 1920s and 30s when he was in one-room school. And, of course, you would bring a Valentine for everybody from, you know, the first grade to the eighth grade. You brought Valentines for everybody in your class and you exchanged them. And I thought it was really interesting because most of the Valentines that they exchanged had the person's first and last name, and from the person's first and last name, which sometimes there was only 10 or 15 kids in the classroom, and they put their first and last names on both.
That's hilarious. Kind of like putting your area code in front of someone you're calling locally.
Right.
Yep.
Now the popular thing to do, millions of people each year now send electric Valentines or love coupons or printable greeting cards. So it's really cut back on the number of cards that are sent each year. In the United States, Valentine's Day ranks second to Christmas in the amount of greetings exchanged. So it's still second. Christmas still is number one, but even, you know, as time goes on, the amount of people that send Christmas cards every year is decreased, and the same way with Valentine's. Now that you can get them electronically, it's a much more popular way to send them and to send them to more people. In the second half of the 20th century, the practice of exchanging cards extended to other gifts, such as the roses or chocolates packed in the red satin heart-shaped boxes. And I'm sure that most people in their time have gotten at least one heart-shaped box of Valentine's candy in their lifetime. And those boxes were also very elaborately decorated in the old days. They're also almost all printed today. But in the past, they were fabric-colored, had real or silk flowers on them, embellished with lace and all kinds of jewels. So that was an important thing to give somebody, too, was a heart-shaped box. In the 1980s, the diamond industry got on board with Valentine's Day and promoted that would be an occasion for giving diamonds. So it's still advertised today about giving your sweetheart diamonds on Valentine's Day, and a lot of the jewelry stores advertise that. But that really took off in the 80s when the diamond industry had a big campaign to make diamonds popular for Valentine's Day. A lot of people send flowers, and it's estimated that in the U.S. alone, we spend $3.3 billion on flowers for loved ones on Valentine's Day. So this year, the economy will be helped by $3.3 billion. The florist will be helped sending Valentine flowers. And I was just talking about the box of candy. And it's interesting. The Valentine's Day tradition of giving a box of candy was started in the 1800s by Richard Cadbury. And we really associate Cadbury chocolate with, it's a British chocolate manufacturing family, and we associate them more with Easter than we do with Valentine's Day now because of Cadbury eggs. But he is the gentleman who started the fancy boxes for Valentine's Day.
Very good. That's neat. And it's delicious. I love Cadbury chocolate.
That was way back in 1861.
So the English did milk chocolate as compared to the Germans, who did more of a dark chocolate. Is that?
I believe so.
Yes.
Yep. And that Cadbury is a British chocolate manufacturing family that has been in business since the 1800s, still in business today. And what they said is they created fancy boxes. They were exactly what they sounded like. They decided to sell their chocolates in heart-shaped boxes and marketed it as the perfect gift for Valentine's Day. They were decorated with cupids, roses, hearts, and other romantic imagery, which made them an instant hit. Cadbury heart-shaped boxes were the first ever created, and from then on, they became part of the holiday's custom. And today, more than 36 million boxes Valentine chocolate are sold each year, and that's 58 million pounds of chocolate.
58 million pounds?
Pounds of chocolate are sold at Valentine's every year.
Oh, I'm in heaven.
Yeah, doesn't it sound wonderful?
It sure does. I'll just take a bath in it. Thank you much.
And conversation hearts are associated with Valentine's Day. And they got their start as medical lozenges. Weirdly enough, they first began when a Boston pharmacist named Oliver Chase invented a machine that simplified the way medical lozenges used for sore throats and other illnesses could be made. The result was America's first candy-making machine, because the pharmacist soon shifted his focus from making lozenges to making candy instead. And when he started making this candy, he founded the New England Confection Company, which we better know as Necco. And the candy lozenges soon became what we know today as Necco wafers. Now, it was Chase's brother who came up with the idea to print messages on the candy in 1866. And so he started printing messages on the candy in 1866, but they didn't change to, they were round then. They didn't change to their heart shape until 1901, appealing specifically to Valentine Day sweethearts. So in 1866, he started printing messages on the Necco wafers, but in 1901, they started to get specific messages for Valentine's Day and got their heart shape. There's more than 8 billion of those little hearts are sold in the 6 weeks leading up to Valentine's Day. That's 13 million pounds of those little candy hearts, and they make up 40% of the Valentine candy market, just behind chocolate. So they also change their messages every year and come up with new messages. Most recently, they put texting messages on their sweetheart hearts. So that's very interesting to know where that came from. And that was the basis of the first candy manufacturing machine that could stamp out the little round disc and then later on create the little hearts with the different messages on them. So I shared some memories with you today about Valentine's Day. I hope it brought back some memories about Valentine's Day and a special Valentine you maybe got in the past, or a special box of chocolates, or if you still have that box of chocolates, not the chocolates itself, but the Valentine box. A lot of people kept those boxes and stored other things in them because they had special memories, and they were so beautiful. Some of them were really large. Some of them were smaller. Some of them had double layers. It just depended on the manufacturer. We still see all those boxes lined up on the store shelves today. They're not as beautiful as they used to be because they're just mass produced now and, you know, printed on, but not as embellished as they used to be in the old days with, like I said, the fabric color covering or the satin covering. It was real fabric in the old days, or a silk flower or real lace on them. So a lot of those boxes show up and are kept for the years. A lot of people kept a special Valentine too, and some people keep every greeting card that they received. It's a lot to clean out when somebody has to clean out your greeting cards, but some people did keep all of their cards, or some people just kept special ones, or ones they gave to their kids when they were little and have cherished memories. So I hope I brought back some memories for everybody today about Valentine's Day. And just a couple side notes. We always invite you to come out and visit our museum at 215 Niagara Street, Monday through Saturday from 9 to 5, or visit the Erie Canal Discovery Center at 24 Church Street in Lockport during its winter hours of Friday and Saturday from 10 to 3. We have a lot of wonderful treasures you can come out and see, and we have a lot of wonderful information to share. We have a wonderful staff, and they do a great job helping you with research and answering your history questions. You can always contact us at 716-434-7433 for more information. And again, we thank you so much for having the History Center on the radio today. And we want to make sure that everybody has a historical day every day.
All right. Boy, thank you so much, Becky. What a wonderful show. You do such thorough research, and we certainly do appreciate the time that you invest in this show, and we appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us for this 45 minutes. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. You've been listening to Becky Pillar from the Niagara County Historical Society. And once again, we thank you. We look forward to seeing you again in about a month, Becky.
Thank you so much again for having us on, and thank you for supporting the History Center.
It's our pleasure. All right, folks, happy Valentine's Day, and we're going to see you again soon.